the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Should you leave your crypto on an exchange or store them in a wallet that you control? There's a saying in crypto, not your keys, not your crypto, meaning that if you don't have the private keys to your crypto, it doesn't belong to you. The exchange controls those keys. This has been advanced as a reason to move crypto off exchanges and into wallets that you do control. This is no small matter. Several crypto exchanges have been hacked and the looters made off with billions of dollars. These include the Ronin Network, where hackers made off with $625 million in Ethereum and the stablecoin USDC. A similar amount was stolen from decentralized finance platform Poly Network, though most of the funds were eventually returned in that case. The infamous FTX exchange was also hacked for $600 million. Perhaps the most famous of all was the Mt. Gox hack back in 2014 when 650,000 Bitcoin was stolen, though some of that has been recovered. This has fired up the debate about self-custody of crypto, though there are many who argue that keeping your coins on reputable exchanges is preferable. It's worth noting that none of the major South African exchanges, such as Luno, Valor, and Alcoin Trader, have suffered such a breach. If self-custody is the way to go, then what wallet should you choose, and how complicated is it to park your coins there? To answer that, we're joined by Kriyan Singh, who's co-founder of CoinEd, a crypto educational platform. Kriyan is also a project manager for distributed ledger technology at the CSIR. Hi, Kriyan. It's good to talk to you again, and thanks for your time. This is a question that many people are asking. When should you move your funds off an exchange and into self-custody? Maybe give us a little bit of guidance on that.
Great. Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me on the show. I think one of the aspects that contributes to that question being answered is, at what stage are you looking to store your funds for the long term? Now, why I say that is because many people store their cryptocurrencies on exchanges because they're trading them at the moment. But when you reach a point where it is more of an investment, for example, and the intention is to hold it for the long term, it is probably better to move it into a self-custody solution. And that entails a number of different options. It could be a software solution. It could be hardware solutions. It could be something that's browser-based, for example. So the first aspect is, at what stage are you looking to store it for the long term? Secondly, you need to consider the cost of moving it to offline storage, or rather to self-custody. Now, when it comes to hardware wallets, the cost of a hardware wallet is fairly significant. It could be in the range of 2,000 Rand. So it doesn't quite make sense to move a few thousand Rand off the exchange onto a hardware wallet. But it could very well be worthwhile moving it to a software wallet.
That obviously opens up a whole discussion about the risks. What are the risks of moving to self-custody as against leaving your coins on the exchange?
Well, I think one of the main risks of moving to self-custody is that you now take ownership of the security of those funds. And that means that you need to have the technical knowledge to back up those funds using your recovery phrase, for example, and also setting up your device or software or whatever platform you use to store the funds offline in the adequate way. Now, there's been multiple instances of people that have moved their funds to self-custody and lost the backup of those wallets. Now, that proves a huge problem because this could range from a few hundred rand to a few thousand rand to maybe in the order of millions of dollars. And this has happened quite often in the past. So there is a fair amount of technical knowledge that is required and an understanding of the risks that entails. Another aspect to consider is that by storing your cryptocurrencies on exchanges, you are relying on the security that those exchanges have implemented. Now, this may be a good point to mention that if you are holding funds where the loss of those funds are not detrimental to your life, then it could be a better option to store your funds on cryptocurrency exchanges, because again, you are relying on the security that they have implemented. And a number of the exchanges in South Africa, for example, have implemented very good security protocols. And as you mentioned, there have not been significant reports of huge breaches of these exchanges in the past. So there is a level of trust that comes with storing it on an exchange, but when it does become significant, you are at risk of losing bigger values. Now, when these values reach a point that it could be detrimental to your life, then it becomes advisable to move it to a self-custody option.
I want to come back to that point about the dangers of moving onto a hard wallet, but let's just first of all talk about the different types of wallets, because I think this is a point of confusion for a lot of people. And some wallets obviously are more popular than others. Some have a better reputation for security. And you got to get familiar with terms like hot wallets and cold wallets. So maybe start there. Explain the difference between what is a hot wallet and a cold wallet, and just run us through some of the better ones or some of the more reputable ones if you can.
Sure. So hot wallets are generally wallets that are connected to the internet in some way. Now, a couple of examples could be a browser-based wallet, which is similar to an extension that you download on Google Chrome or Microsoft Edge, and they are always connected to the internet in some way. Another example might be an app on your phone that is a cryptocurrency wallet. Now, whether it is specific to a particular cryptocurrency or it encompasses multiple cryptocurrencies, the fact of the matter is your phone is generally connected to the internet all the time, and this does certainly bring a certain level of risk to running this type of wallet. Again, a hot wallet is connected to the internet. On the other hand, you have a cold wallet, which is generally a device or some sort of hardware protocol that is disconnected from the internet for the majority of the time. And in most cases, there's actually a gap between the usage of that device and any activity that happens on the internet. So a couple of examples might be your hardware wallets, which, for lack of a better term, looks like a USB stick, or in some cases looks like a USB stick, but it is specifically designed to manage and hold cryptocurrencies. Another type of cold wallet is a paper wallet, for example, which is a piece of paper that is printed out, and it contains what is called your private key. Now, your private key is like your password to your accounts. And if you lose access to this password, or if anyone gains access to this password, they can steal your funds. So the whole point of a wallet is to manage the private key and keep it secure. And there are various ways of doing it, whether it be a hot wallet or a cold wallet. Now, there are a couple of types of hot wallets. You could use software packages like Exodus or Electrum. There's also mobile wallets like Mycelium and Trust Wallet. Then on the web wallet side of things, which is, like I said, a browser, you could use something like MetaMask or Coinbase Wallet. There are many manufacturers of hardware wallets, and I think two of the most common and most trusted at the moment are probably Ledger Wallets and Trezor Wallets. And within those brands, there are various models that that suit your purpose based on how efficient and how advanced you want to be. And then lastly, like I said, paper wallets is a very rudimentary way of storing cryptocurrencies. I think if I can give you an example, when we use paper wallets within CoinEd, we use it as a tool to illustrate to students in a classroom how private keys and public keys are managed. And generally, we use it to give out prizes, for example, because it is a short-term solution to storing cryptocurrencies.
It's also something, I guess, the paper wallet that you're talking about, which is just really having a written version of your private keys. It's a way that people can understand how storage of crypto actually works and recovery. They might feel safer with having it on paper, but there are risks to that too. You might lose the paper or somebody else might get a hold of it. There's never a simple answer to this. And also, having your own wallet is rather like having your own bank. You have custody of your funds and you transact how you see fit. One of the big fears of having a cold wallet, which is disconnected from the internet, and Ledger, the example you mentioned, or Trezor being another one, is that you could lose that, which is effectively a USB stick. Bearing in mind, up to 4 million Bitcoin worth about $240 billion is reckoned to have been lost forever because people stored them on hard drives and flash drives that were just thrown away at some point. Surely that is one of the biggest risks of self-custody on cold wallets.
Yes, it definitely is. Now, as you mentioned, the issue is that you lose access or you lose the device itself. And something that many people don't realize is that within the cryptocurrency world, there is no middleman to go to for assistance if you lose access to your device, or rather, if you lose access to what is called your private keys. Now, in setting up hardware wallets, there is a process required that allows you to back up your private keys. And the backup process involves backing up your seed phrase, which is generally 12 or 24 unique words that, when strung together, recreate your private key. And in the instances that you mentioned where funds have been lost because these devices have been lost, it was a case of the person not backing up their seed phrase or their private keys. Now, why I mentioned that is because it is of utmost importance to create multiple backups of this process, or rather the seed phrase and your private keys. This could entail writing it down on a piece of paper and storing that piece of paper in a way that ensures that it cannot be easily destroyed. Damage to these backups could entail a fire, it could be theft, it could be a flood, it could be any sort of natural disaster, because remember, this is a piece of paper. So that is one way of doing it, but it is recommended to do it in multiple different ways. And for example, one of the ways that I advocate for is to use metallic devices. Like, you know, a very rudimentary way of doing this is to take a washer and a bolt, and by stamping the words onto washers and then storing it together in a bolt, you're ensuring that that little setup that you have there is fireproof. So in addition to having paper backups and having harder backups, you could also do software backups. But then again, you are responsible for the security of that software. And by storing it in the cloud, you have the security of the cloud platform. But as you know, cloud platforms have been breached before. So it is not necessarily advisable to keep it in any software platform or cloud system.
Just explain that washer and bolt system that you're talking about. I didn't quite understand what you meant by that.
One of the ways of storing your recovery phrase is storing it on a metal device where the words that you are backing up are stamped onto that metal plate. And this ensures that your words are stored in a way that is fireproof and possibly rust resistant, corrosive resistant, etc. And it is basically a harder way of storing your recovery versus storing it on a paper platform.
Okay, I think people might get the idea that there are quite a few technical barriers to using wallets, and this is one of the reasons why crypto adoption is a little bit sticky, is not quite as fast as it should be. The idea that you have to store these phrases, that there are private keys and public keys, all a bit confusing for a lot of people. And in speaking to your colleague, Carl, some time ago, Carl from the CSIR, he was advocating that for many people, keeping your coins on an exchange is probably advisable, probably preferable because of these technical complexities. Do you agree with that?
For the majority of users, I do agree with that. The reason being, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, is that there are technical requirements to storing your own cryptocurrencies. And if you are not knowledgeable of these various aspects of cryptocurrencies, then exchanges generally manage that risk for you using their own security protocols. Now, these types of security protocols, for example, could include two-factor authentication. It could include locking withdrawals of your funds for a specific period of time based on your requirements. And it could also require further methods of authentication before you can withdraw your cryptocurrencies. In a lot of cases where the user is unfamiliar with cryptocurrencies in general, I would suggest storing them on exchanges until it reaches a point where there's a significant amount of wealth that is being stored there. And again, going back to the breaches that have happened on exchanges before, you can imagine that a cryptocurrency exchange is generally a honeypot for criminals who are always targeting the exchanges to try and steal as much as they can. So I don't want to scare people into keeping their funds off an exchange, but bear in mind that there are pros and cons to both methods.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken to all of the exchanges and asked them about their security protocols. Of course, most of the coins on exchanges like Luna and Valor are held in offline. They're in cold wallets. There's a certain amount that is kept hot, which is connected to the internet, but even there, there are layers of security. So it's extremely difficult for anybody to attack that. But what is also interesting, if you talk to these exchanges, is the number of attempted attacks they get daily. That's quite a staggering figure. You know, from recollection, I think it's hundreds of attacks sometimes that are happening daily, none of which are successful. So that does point to the fact that the security on the exchanges is good and it's solid. Then you also have, if you're going to move to self-custody, obviously, you want to make sure if you're using Ledger, which is like a USB disk that you would plug into your computer, it has become more intuitive, that less difficult to make a mistake in transferring funds, correct?
Yes, I agree that using a private wallet often is very intuitive. But I do also want to mention that in handling your own transactions, there are certain technical aspects that need to be considered, such as setting your fees and ensuring that your transactions are included in a relevant time frame that, you know, facilitates your transaction properly. Now, when exchanges handle this for you, they ensure that all the correct options are selected to ensure that your transactions happen in a speedy manner. And they also, in addition to that, manage the keys on your behalf. So, you know, going back to that discussion about private keys and public keys, one does need to understand the difference between the two if you are managing your funds by yourself. Whereas when they exchange, they manage the private keys, and the only thing that you need to worry about is your public address. And, you know, your address, you can liken that to your account number. It is something that you can give out in public, and you are not risking your funds in any way. But when you do manage these funds on your own private wallet, there is the inherent risk that if your private key is somehow released into the public domain, it means that anyone can steal your funds. So by managing your own funds on your own device, there are some technical requirements that you need to understand. But with the correct amount of education, this can actually become quite easy.
I guess the bottom line there is that if you are going to self-custody, do a little bit of research on the type of wallet that you want to use. There are browser-based wallets such as MetaMask. There are hard wallets such as Ledger and Trezor. And do quite a bit of research so that you don't fall into these many traps that you've just been talking about, right?
Correct. When it comes to managing your own wallets, in most cases, it does require some software installation or configuration. And this could pose a certain technical aspect to setting up these wallets. And furthermore, when it comes to updating these wallets, there is a requirement to always have your backups easily accessible in case something goes wrong with the installation or the update process. So, in summary, it has been proven that keeping your funds on an exchange, and let me say reputable exchange, has proven to be somewhat safe in the past. Bear in mind that there could always be the future risk of an exchange being hacked and your funds being part of the hacked amount. So by keeping it on an exchange, you do need to accept that there is a certain level of risk even though the security protocols are put in place. But when your investment does reach a certain portion where it either requires you to store it in a secure manner or you are looking to store it for the long term, then your better option probably is to move it to self-custody, which could entail hardware wallets, paper wallets, or some sort of software protocol or software wallet. A few good examples is Trezor or Ledger wallets when it comes to your hardware wallets. Your software wallets could include MetaMask or Exodus. And again, your paper wallets is an option for short-term storage or potentially giving people gifts.
Creon, what about inheritance when somebody passes away and you have these wallets which cannot be accessed by the beneficiaries, the people who are supposed to claim those cryptos? What do you do in those circumstances?
Well, that's a great question. And inheritance planning is actually something that needs to be taken quite seriously if you are taking self-custody of your funds. Now, this entails ensuring that you have multiple backups of your recovery phrase and ensuring that your benefactors are aware of these backups and know how to access it. Another important aspect is ensuring that your benefactors have a trusted party to consult with to ensure that if they struggle technically to access these funds, there is someone that is able to assist them. Now, what's interesting is it could be included in your will, but because transferring cryptocurrencies is simply a matter of having access to those private keys, there could be a completely separate system put in place to ensure that your benefactors get access to your funds.
In other words, what you should be doing is referring in your will to where these private keys could be located, correct?
Yes. There is a potential risk to that because a will is in some way a public document. So there are other eyes that are looking at this document in the course of its lifetime. So I would say that maybe referring to the fact that private keys do exist is something that can be put into the will, but certainly not adding your seed phrase to the will, because that enables someone else to get access to your funds.
And would it be safe for you to say you'll find it in the top drawer in my desk or something like that? Or is that too risky?
That might be a bit too risky, yes.
So how would you do it?
If you are the owner of cryptocurrencies and you pass away, then realize that you are the crypto expert that has now left your family. And you're leaving behind a process for your benefactors to follow in such a way that they have access to the funds without losing any of those funds. So the process that you need to set up for them needs to be as simple as possible and also enable them to consult with someone if they have difficulty. Now, this could involve working with a trusted company who perhaps has set up the system on behalf of you, or ensuring that your benefactors are familiar with this trusted entity, so that in the event of your death, they know who to go to.
So I guess what you're saying is that, sometimes people pass away suddenly and they don't have time to prepare for these things, but oftentimes they do. And if that is happening, then you would obviously want to let your family know where they could find these keys, these private keys, without any difficulty. But if it does happen that, somebody passes away as a result of an accident, well, you haven't had time to prepare, then you would have to have something set up in your will and some way of indicating where these keys could be tracked down. Would that be a fair way to represent it?
Yes, I think that's quite accurate.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for that. That was Creon Singh, who is co-founder of CoinEd, a crypto educational platform. He's also project manager for distributed ledger technology at the CSIR. Thank you, Creon.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.